Football America is live and underway here on ESPN alongside Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. This is episode 334. And Herc, I know you were in San Diego last night, so I hope you're dried off for this one.
I'm drier today, but that was something else. I don't think I've seen that in quite some time. Steve Tarundolo would have been upset.
Historic scenes there in San Diego, of course, as the U.S. women advanced past Canada and into the final of the CONCACAF W Gold Cup. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear from the hero, Alyssa Nair, so that should be very exciting. We have also heard, got exclusive interviews with Kyle Larin, of course, the Canadian national team. He plays for Mallorca. They're facing off against Barcelona tomorrow here on ESPN+. Plus, we'll also hear from American Luca de la Torre. He plays at Celta de Vigo. Small trip to the Santiago Bernabeu, a face-off against Real Madrid on Sunday. So we'll look ahead to that. But let's start this edition of the show with the CONCACAF W Gold Cup semifinals between the United States and Canada. Herc, what a game this was. What an event this was. And you were there to live it live. Was it as bad as it looked on TV?
I think it was worse, honestly. I don't know what happened here. Look, they're testing it out, right? You can clearly see it doesn't move. What's crazy is I don't know whose decision it was to continue.
The decision at the end of the day was made, and the U.S. would be the first to benefit from the crazy field conditions here. Jaden Shaw, Herc, making it 1-0.
Yeah, this is where you got to tell your players, do not take any unnecessary risks. No need to pass it back to the goalkeeper. Get it out. You can see what the defender wants to do, tries to do. Jaden Shaw sniffs it, smells it, sees it, finishes it.
Shaw, of course, playing in her home stadium out there at the Snap. Plays for San Diego in the NWSL. It would stay 1-0 through the half. Into the second half here, Herc, and a penalty shout for Canada. What do you think?
Yeah, Jess Fleming has a case here. Look at this. Bad touch. Touch it. That's a stomp. I don't know why this wasn't called or at least looked at.
There's another angle, Herc, where I think Davidson might have got the ball, but I think Canada have a right to at least feel a little bit aggrieved there. We go to the 82nd minute, and the Canadians do finally, Herc, get their equalizer. Jordan Heidema, what a header.
I mean, that's why she's there. She's so good in the air. Jordan Heidema, always a presence in and around the box. Adriana Leon gets the ball out wide. Ball comes back in. Heidema right there. Listen there, B.
So it's 1-1 there. We're headed to extra time. Be about 9 minutes into extra time when the U.S. break through. Sophia Smith here, 1-on-1, 2-1, Herc.
Whoa, don't bury the lead. Rose Lavelle outjumped two center backs to flick this on. What is going on here? Look at this. Whoop! And then Ever Composed puts it away.
Smith off the bench onto the score sheet to give the Americans the lead. Late on, Canada running out of time, and they get another penalty shout here. VAR is going to check, Herc, and it would be given against Alyssa Nair.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. You have to come out. You got to make a play. The Canadian attacker gets there first. We're going to the spot.
Adriana Leon, with all the pressure in the world, converts. It's 2-2, Herc, and we got penalties coming up. And in the penalty shootout, it was pretty much, Herc, all about one player. Alyssa Nair saves the first one here against Leon.
Yeah, Leon, 6 goals, 2 assists, arguably the best player in this tournament. And then Wiedema's going to miss that one as well. That's 2-for-2.
Unbelievable stuff from Nair. Oh, you want more? How could she possibly do more, you're saying? Oh, she could just take a penalty, Herc.
I mean, how do you even ask the coach to take a penalty kick if you're the goalkeeper, let alone the third?
And Jessie Fleming has to make that one to keep Canada alive. She can't get it past Nair. And the Americans, Herc, advance.
And well-deserved in the penalty kick shootout from Alyssa Nair, the hero.
So how about this? An amazing, amazing game for Alyssa Nair. This shout-out to our sports and information group, a beautiful visualization of Alyssa Nair's historic night. And who better to talk about Alyssa Nair's historic night than Alyssa Nair herself? Herc, we've been doing this show 1 day short of 3 years. We have never given a guest a standing ovation, but if ever there was one that was deserved,
look how much
it is Alyssa Nair.
Okay.
3 saves in the penalty shootout, plus a converted penalty as the U.S. Advances past Canada. Alyssa, so many places to kind of start talking about this game. We're definitely going to dive into the weather in just a little bit, but we got to start with your heroics in the penalty shootout. We got a segment here on the show, Run It Back. So we're going to run it back through all of your heroics, the 3 saves and the penalty that you made. walk us through kind of what you guys are thinking ahead of the penalty shootout and your approach to penalties, because this isn't the first time that you've stood on your head.
Yeah, you know, for us, it's something that we take a lot of pride in, something we take very seriously. We put a lot of preparation into, you know, every piece of you know, what a shootout entails. And at the end of the day, we want people as confident as possible to step up and convert. And, you know, just really proud of the group from start to finish for, you know, as soon as it hit minute 120 was, you know, everyone kind of went into shootout mode and we were able to execute.
So this is nuts to me, because you got to talk to me about the approach. I saw actually a stat right before this where penalty kicks that are taken on frame, 14 of them, you block six. So obviously you're doing something right. You know what you're doing here. But then you had the guts to go up there and convert one yourself, which I think is crazy for a goalkeeper. Talk to me about the process about stopping these penalty kicks, especially Adriana León, because she scored one in overtime. Are you thinking she's going the same way? Well, what's your thought process there?
Yeah, you know, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of mind games when it comes to penalty kicks anyways. I think you're always trying to have this mental battle between yourself and the taker. And, you know, for to have to face the same person that just stepped up and took one, you know, 5 minutes prior, I think there's mental mind games on both sides. And just tried to stay as in the zone as I could and try to get the best read possible and put myself in a position to make a save.
Alyssa, you got to tell us about the penalty taking, right? Because we just don't expect that from a goalie. What's the story there? Where did it start? And how do you get this confidence? Because, I mean, Herc knows about finishing.
She buried
it. That penalty. That, yeah. She freaking buried it, Alyssa. I mean, you look like a striker.
Thank you. Yeah, I think for us, it's something that, again, we train it, we practice it. And the expectation on this team is that everyone needs to be ready and prepared to not just take, but to make a penalty when you're called upon. And, you know, we as goalkeepers do the same amount of preparation as everybody else to be prepared for the moment. And it's all about just being as, you know, trained as possible so that when and if you're called upon, that you're ready. And it's something that you've done before and you can feel confident stepping up to do it.
Alyssa, obviously there's the heroics and the penalty shootout, but you got to tell us about the end of this game, Oof. The 120th minute, just like a crazy sequence there. I wonder what you're feeling, what you're thinking, because there was a second when they go to VAR, I think, this might be a red card for Alyssa. Like, how did that all play out? And then how do you flip the switch to go from, hey, we just gave up this potentially devastating goal to we still got a shot to win it in the shootout?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that was a crazy few minutes there at the end to kind of go back through and, you know, just a lot happening in that moment. And, you know, to be able to, obviously disappointing after 120 minutes to give up a goal right at the end there after the team had kind of battled and fought through a lot of adversity, a lot of, you know, challenging weather. You know, so I think just, she obviously scored it. We knew we were going into a shootout at that point. And then, you know, we just had to regroup mentally, emotionally, refocus. And just, you know, I was just really proud of the group to be able to come together, everyone. And, you know, it was all business. It was, all right, let's get this done. And, you know, the regulation is passed and whatever happened. And it's time to move on and finish it in a shootout.
Alyssa, I was there covering the game for ESPN Deportes, and the weather was a major factor. Let me get your input on this. Should the game have been played? And it obviously was played. What was it like playing in that weather? Tell me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a question outside of my pay grade, whether or not it should be played or not. But, you know, we were told to play, and that's what, you know, that was the expectation. And, you know, it was definitely challenging. The ball obviously wasn't moving very well. It couldn't really pass a lot. So we had to adjust what we wanted to do and the style in which we wanted to play. And again, credit to the players on the field for, you know, realizing that pretty quick and adjusting to what our original game plan was coming in and being able to adapt on the fly and, you know, try to make it work as best as possible.
Alyssa, would you say it was safe for the players to play on that type of field? Because there were moments where the ball wasn't advancing and it looked like players were definitely having trouble moving.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely glad that, you know, all players came out unscathed on both sides of the field. It was certainly very challenging. It was very, very wet. and a lot of slipping and sliding and different things. But you know, I'm not really sure who is at the end of the day making the call. I think there was some confusion if it was the referees or if it was CONCACAF. So I'm not sure who has the ultimate decision say in that, but again, just proud of the way the group fought and battled in less than ideal circumstances. And I mean, for both teams, it was the same for both teams to have to deal with. But it was certainly a unique game.
Alyssa, I got some good news. The chances of precipitation in San Diego on Sunday, 0%.
There you go.
Okay, 0%. So something good there. Look, Alyssa, I know you want to hype up all your teammates after a game like that, right? Because it's truly a team effort. But there's one player that I'd like your perspective on specifically, and that's Naomi Girma. Because as the goalie, you can really appreciate what the center back is doing. And kind of as like a layperson here, you know, she's not a player. She does have a lot of hype in terms of like U.S. women's national team fans love her, but it's not a position that gets a lot of hype. And yet, when you watch the team with and without her, you know, just from my perspective, Alyssa, there's like a marked difference. How do you explain that, and what do you think of Naomi Girma's impact on this team?
Yeah, I think, you know, Naomi's a fantastic player, and I, you know, love having the opportunity to play alongside her. And I think she is somebody that plays kind of with a wisdom well beyond her years, and just the her composure and her, you know, just quiet confidence is contagious. And I think it's, you look at her, you know that you can rely on her and she's going to get the job done. And, you know, I just love the style in which she plays and the commitment to her craft. And I think it's evident to see just the type of player she is.
Let's talk about the final, massive final against Brazil. Give me your thoughts on this matchup. I mean, Brazil's been steamrolling teams, you know, Adriana with Debina, with players like Beatrice. It's a star-studded team. Give me your thoughts on this final.
I'm excited for it. I think, you know, every time we've had the opportunity to play Brazil, obviously a great deal of respect for them as a team and great players that they have on their team. And it's going to be a battle. It's going to be... I hope a great final. We've got to be ready for a potent attack, that's for sure. And, you know, regroup after the emotional win from last night. And now it's all business looking ahead to Sunday.
Alyssa, what would a win against Brazil mean? You know, keeping in mind that the Olympics are coming up. I always think with this national team, it's kind of binary, right? You win a tournament, it's a success. If you don't win it, it's kind of a failure. Is there a gray area now with this team, or you still feel that way?
No, I think, you know, every time we step on the field, we want to win and we want to put together good performances. And I think for this being an Olympic year, it's also important to keep building from one game to the next with the ultimate goal of representing well at the Olympics this summer. But this is a huge game. This is a game that we want to obviously continue to grow and build from the tournament that we're playing in right now. And you always want to lift trophies. I think that at the end of the day, that's the goal of any team. That's the goal of any tournament that you play in. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for us against a great team on Sunday to really see, you know, kind of the growth of this team from the start of this tournament till now.
0% chance of precipitation on Sunday. We hope it stays that way in San Diego. They say it'll be about 60 degrees at kickoff. Alyssa, thanks so much for joining us here on Football Americas. Great to have you, and good luck on Sunday.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Herc, let's turn our attention to the first of the two semifinals there played at Snapdragon. Mexico taking on Brazil. Brazil having beat Argentina in the quarters. Mexico advancing past Paraguay. Pick this one up 3 minutes in. Brazil with a chance. Yasmin with the lefty shot save.
Yeah, Yasmin with the left shot save, but Barreras is easily contending that shot right there. Nothing to it, and we continue on.
Brazil would break through in the 21st minute. Cross comes into the box. Some chaos here. Adriana Leal going to take advantage. 1-0 Brazil.
Yeah, Leal takes advantage, but this is all types of miscommunication. Barreras right there comes out, doesn't get the ball. Nikki Hernandez doesn't see the ball, hits off her shoulder, can't react quick enough. It's just a comedy of errors that leads to the very first opportunity for Brazil.
Mexico down 1-0 in the 21st minute, and 4 minutes later, things would get worse. Brazil on the counterattack. Beatriz is going to get on the ball here and be taken down by Nicolette Hernandez. Now, after a VAR review, Herc, this would become a straight red for Hernandez.
Yeah. Nikki Hernandez right there in a compromising position. One could argue that Bernal, her teammate, is already pushing Beatriz down, but she's the last defender in a goal-scoring opposition. This is Dagso, and it's a red card.
Mexico down to 10 players after a VAR review. Hernandez sent off, and things going from bad to worse. Into the second half, 3 minutes in, Brazil keep coming. This is Antonia, 2-0, to make it 2-0 in the first half still.
Yeah, Antonia there. It's Antonia, Adriana, Borges, down that right-hand side for Brazil, that left-hand side for Mexico. It was one-way traffic.
Now we're into the second half, and 3 minutes in, Brazil make it 3-0. Yasmin with the back heel.
I mean, cheeky back heel, and it's the worst possible scenario for Mexico. You just started the second half. You need to absorb. You need to give yourself some life, and Brazil comes right down that end, and it's a cheeky back heel, and it's 3-0.
Brazil in cruise control. Mexico trying to rally late on. 73rd minute, Jackie Ovalle, an individual run trying to make something happen.
Yeah, La Maga doing everything she can, the little magician right there, trying to make something happen, but it was really like this all night by herself. Very solitary play, couldn't do it. But then watch this up, between four or five defenders, and again, it's just too much. Jackie Ovalle can't do it by herself.
The Brazilian defense keeping the clean sheet against Mexico. They've conceded just once throughout this tournament. And Mexico goes down here by a final score of 3-0. Pedro Lopez frustrated. Mexico eliminated at the hands of Brazil. All right, Herc, let's get right to it. The red card against Mexico. What do you think?
You know, I did a post-game show for ESPN Deportes right after this. An hour-long post-game show on Fútbol Picante dedicated to this game. And the talk was robo, how the Mexican team was robbed. And there was much divide in between the panelists. Those who thought it was a clear and obvious red and those who thought it was very, very harsh. I was of the idea that this is a red. I mean, you can maybe argue Bernal is pushing the opponent, Beatriz, into Nikki Hernandez's path, but what you can't argue is Nikki Hernandez misses the ball, makes contact with Beatriz as she's going into a 1v1 opportunity with the goalkeeper. That would be denial and an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. That's a red card. I don't think there's much to argue here, and it's unfortunate because Nikki Hernandez, Naperville's very own, was already on a mistake, was already put in a compromised position, and this red card, while it may have not changed the actual outcome, it did condition going forward Mexico's play.
And what was the key word you said there was maybe the other defenders involved? Is that what you said, maybe?
I mean, no. I could maybe argue if I'm Mexico that the other defender, but there's no denial that Beatriz was let down or pulled down or brought down, I should say, in an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. It's very minute. And the only reason VAR comes into play is if there's a clear and obvious error, which they determined that there was. Because
you said maybe. And that's my point, Herc, is when you bring in the maybe, and I think there is something to be discussed here.
So you're
here,
saying Bernal is the one who fouled her?
I think there's a very solid case to be made here. Like, if this was a ref class, that this was a red card offense. But there is some debate. And, Herc, the original call on the field was not red. So why is VAR feeling like they need to intervene here? Why not let the ref, who saw it on the field, who saw it live, not one of three jokers, because somewhere removed from the game, making the decision? You got to have confidence in your ref on the field. That is her call. If it's clear and obvious, if there wasn't a 40-minute debate
Torre
on ESPN
Pinto
Deportes, if it
no,
wasn't,
a,
if it
no
wasn't
jokers.
Something we're talking about
Time out.
On
Torre
this.
Torre Pinto and her crew are no jokers. They actually ref the World Cup final.
Yeah, but the
people,
I'm not saying Torre Pinto.
Spain, the World
I said
Cup
the
final.
VAR crew, the
so
VAR
referee,
crew are totally removed.
If a referee can admit she made a mistake, okay, with proof of video footage.
No, we're just re-legislating the game here. She made the original call.
Sep, I've not come across one official that's a pundit or has done officiating.
Why do we have VAR? Why do we have VAR to look over every single call that every
Sep,
single
you have
referee
VAR
makes?
For this very instance.
No, for
to make
clear
sure
and
make
obvious,
a mistake.
Herc, not for things we debate.
It was clear and obvious, Seb. I have not come across one professional who's not said it was clear and obvious. I know it hurts.
There's another player right there. What do you mean it's
situation.
Not clear and obvious? What do you mean there's
Nikki
another player
Nikki
right
Hernandez
there? You can
the
make the argument
player,
that the
Seb.
Other player
Nikki
is going to make a play.
Is the last player. You cannot deny she's the last player impeding Beatriz from the goal.
When you say she's the last player, you're acting as if the other player, who you just said might have made the foul, doesn't exist.
Behind her.
Yes, but that player can still make a play.
No, Seth, that's not how the law works. I can't sit here and try to educate you on the law. That's not how the law works, Seth. That's a clear and obvious red card. I've not come across one person that's been in officiating that's not admitted that's a clear and obvious red.
Well, you know what? You're hanging out with the wrong people. And I think we were robbed, not of a Mexico win, because I think Brazil clearly superior, but we were robbed of a much better game. Like, that could have been a much better game if Mexico plays all 90 minutes.
Yeah, I don't want to pick on a player, but I think a player robbed you of a much better game. That's a reality. Mistakes cause games to go awry, and that was a mistake.
Okay. Look, all I ask for is less VAR, and every time I lift my head up, we get more and more of it. So I would just generally want less. Let's hear from Pedro Lopez, okay? He's the manager of the Mexican team. Had some very interesting comments after the match.
El balance es muy bueno, creo que hemos crecido como equipo, creo que hemos dado una imagen dentro del torneo, también para el fútbol femenil de México, los que nos han seguido desde la distancia, hemos conseguido enganchar a muchas aficionadas, la imagen ha sido buena y te voy a decir, creo que realmente nosotras perdemos el partido de hoy, pero quien pierde realmente es la Copa de Oro porque se va a México.
Mexico eliminated from the tournament, but the real losers are CONCACAF. Are we giving Pedro Lopez here a get lost, or are you buying what he's saying?
This is difficult because I absolutely love what Pedro Lopez was about this tournament. And Pedro Lopez took a lot of heat from the Mexican press after this game. He changed the formation. He changed the lineup, which is what he's been doing pretty much the whole tournament. If you look at who's played up top all tournament, it was always somebody different. We had Stephanie Mayor and Charlene Corral play against Argentina. We had, you know, Mayra Pelayo, and you had Ovalle, and you had Palacios play against the States. It was always different formations. It was always different people, personnel, and that was never an issue. Now it's an issue. I respect what Pedro Lopez has done in this tournament. And I know what he's trying to say. But could you imagine El Piojo Lopez? Oh, sorry, could you imagine El Piojo Herrera? Could you imagine Jimmy Lozano bowing out in a semifinal? And I know the circumstances are different, but could you imagine them bowing out in a semifinal of a Gold Cup, of the CONCACAF Nations League in Dallas, Jimmy Lozano saying, we may have lost, but the true losers today are CONCACAF because Mexico is no longer in it? Come on, man. Stop, just quit while you were ahead. What I hope does not happen is we shift away from all the good that this Mexican national team has done. We are not too far removed from remembering what it was like, the apoyo, the support for this Mexican national team, or lack thereof. They did a lot of good. Don't go down this road.
Yeah.
We all know what they did. We all know what the Mexican support, which is nothing new to the Mexican people, were about in CONCACAF. You don't need to go down this road.
Yeah. There's definitely some truth to what he says, right? It's like, it's hard to argue. A Mexico-USA final, like, you think about the crowd in San Diego would have been epic. Think about, you know, our friends on ESPN Deportes, the ratings that a USA-Mexico would have got. It's going to be much different for USA-Brazil. He's not wrong, but there's like an unearned arrogance to this, right, Herc? If a Twyla Kilgore said this of a U.S. women's national team, right, that had all of its reputation, then I think you would still kind of scoff at it, but at least it would be earned. Mexico has done something in this tournament, but overall, Herc, very, very little to earn what I felt was like some arrogance in these comments from Pedro Lopez. I know he's trying to build the team up, and he's done a good job in kind of changing the culture and making a more confident group out of this team, but here I think he's gone like a step too far.
He's gone a step too far, and it's not necessary because he's said all the right things throughout the tournament about we should forget about the U.S. win because right now it's about something greater. Great. How he talks about like how they want to play, what they want to be. Great. You don't need to go down this road. Pedro Lopez was saying all the right things. Mm-hmm. It was out of his hands. If he said, listen, we lost to a better team and we were a man down, like, what did you expect? Nobody in their right mind would say, you were wrong for this. That's not going to happen. That just wasn't going to happen.
Herc, if we go big picture on this tournament for Mexico, right, there were a lot of individual standouts. Is there one player that you can pick maybe from this El Tri Femenil side that for you boosted their stock the most?
I mean, I think it's very obvious. It's Jackie Ovalle. I mean, Jackie Ovalle was probably not on the radar of some people. She plays for Tigres Femenil. She's been around with the national team since she was 18. She's She's approaching 100 goals with Tigres Femenil, and she's only 24 years of age, and this was her coming out party. You know, scoring all the goals that she scored, 5 goals, 2 assists, being the playmaker for a team that was very enjoyable to watch.
She's hey, firma la goal.
Like, she's going to be on the radar of some big teams. Tigres has already established themselves as a major player in CONCACAF, and they've already sold players like Mia Fischel to Chelsea. Mm-hmm. I think Jackie Ovalle can catch a lot of names, or a lot of attention, and deservedly so. Let me throw out one other name.
Okay.
Mayra Pelayo. She's 27 years old. She's played a handful of games for the Mexican national team. She was a mainstay in the youth national team levels for the U.S., okay? U23, U20, U17, U15, West Palm Beach, Florida represent there. She's a player that I think has caught a lot of attention. And today is Tijuana. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some NWSL team sniffing around at Mayra Pelayo and what she's done in this tournament.
It's funny you mentioned Pelayo, because I'm with you. Ovalle is by far the standout at 24 years old. Would love to see what's in her future, whether it is Europe or maybe, you know, the National Women's Soccer League. But Pelayo not only has the great moment, the clincher against the United States, Herc, she started the game against Paraguay. She didn't start the game against Brazil. And when she came on against Brazil, even a player down, she seemed to make a difference. If there's any criticism for me of the manager, it might be that he didn't start Pelayo in this game against Brazil.
It's fair criticism, and one would argue, well, it's at the expense of Maria Sanchez, because that's who didn't start against Paraguay, right? Mm-hmm. And Diana Ordóñez, Maria Sanchez are fantastic players, but they're also two players that are in the middle of their preseason. Do not forget, the NWSL season starts next week, so you're in a tournament and you're not match fit. Something both players have stressed has been an issue with them, and Maria Sanchez has said maybe they should go with other players to play with, so that's a fair criticism if you wanted to criticize something. But do not forget who Maria Sanchez is. Mm-hmm. Do not forget what she represents to the Mexican national team and who she is in the league. She's one of the highest paid players in the NWSL. And Diana Ordóñez, in her own right, is a great goal scorer. Maybe that wasn't the play. For a team like Brazil, you need to go a little less a player that's more hold up and more in the box heading and more players who are going to be fast in transition, a la what you did against the U.S. women's national team.
We focused a lot here on the attack. I will shout out one more Tigres player who I thought was great in defense throughout the tournament. That was Greta Espinosa.
Yeah.
Made some huge like goal line clearances, last second challenges. I don't think Mexico gets as far as they do without her. USA against Brazil. That's the final of the 2024 CONCACAF W Gold Cup. It'll be Sunday on ESPN Deportes. Coverage starting 8:15 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:15 p.m. Pacific. All right, Herc, we are well and truly in the midst of kit season here on Football Americas. Last week, we had the top 5 kits from the NWSL. This week, it's USL's top kits, of course. USL kicking off its season this Saturday. I think we got 7 championship games on ESPN Plus for you. Herc, what are you wearing from our USL collection here?
This is Czech Republic's new kit. It's got a little Hummel. You know I love me some old school Hummel. How about the new skill Hummel? Czech Republic and Oakland Roots, thank you. The only clubs to send us some jerseys, so we will show you some love.
You love your Hummel. I love my Charlie. So there you go, the Oakland Roots. I believe this is their away kit. Let's get to the runners-up here from around USL's kit drop season. And we've got 3 runners up here. Her production somewhat indecisive. We got Sacramento Republic's alternate kit. Okay, like that with the sash. We've got Phoenix Rising. They're the defending champions, of course. And then El Paso, their navy kit. Herc, which of those 3 you like the most?
I like the Sacramento one, but the producer better tell me the Phoenix one is called its championship kit. Oh, good Lord. That is just... I love the audacity of naming your kit the championship kit.
Well, you're the champions. You're the champions. You've earned it.
I
like that Sacramento one with the sash. That's baller. All right, let's get to the actual top 5 here, not your runners-up. Number 5, Pittsburgh Riverhounds. This is their steel jersey. It's their away kit, a Charlie special.
Yo, we need to get that one for Mal, who's an actual Steeler. Mal's a massive Steeler. That's like a little homage to the Steelers. I like the little... gold on gray action you got going on. That's pretty fire. Yeah.
Listen, this is a beautiful kit. I prefer the Pittsburgh home kit, which has like the bridges on it. I thought that's the one we were gonna slide in here. Production and I disagree, but the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, an iconic franchise in USL.
Look at my man with the gold hoops too. All right.
And a beautiful color scheme as well, as they come in at number 5 on our countdown of the top 5 USL kits for 2024. What do we got at number 4? Speaking of iconic franchises, the Tampa Bay Rowdies. This is their primary kit, Herc, with the hoop sleeves, which I know you love.
Can I be honest? I've never liked the Rowdies designs at all, like the old school designs.
Really?
Yeah, I never was about it. And then they kind of went away, and I'm like, why are you guys going away from like the hoops? Why are you going away from like what's iconic? And now it's like, I kind of want one. You know? Like, I'm digging it. I just hope they have hoop socks as well.
Yes, yes. Big part of the hoops is the hoop socks, as anyone who was alive in the 90s will tell you. I think I said franchise. I should have said club. That's the beautiful thing about USL. There you have it. The Rowdies in at number 4.
Oh, they got
4.
To them.
Number 3, New Mexico United. This is what they're calling their Sandia kits. Okay.
Okay. I have a. Why
not
is it,
Sandias in watermelon.
That's what
Sandias
I wanted
in,
to ask.
It's a resort.
Oh, it's the Casillo Sandia kit. Okay. I like the color. Listen, I'm a big New Mexico United guy. They sent me their kit last time with a little paint all over it. That was sweet. This is sleek. I'll give them sleek. They should have renamed it. I mean, Sandia, I'm expecting watermelon. I don't want watermelon.
Yes, yeah, that's what I was kind of expecting here, but it is their color scheme kind of with the yellow. So shout out to New Mexico United. They get a drip in here and are in at number 3. Number 2.
A lot of yellow.
We're going to the West Coast. A jersey you've actually already seen here on Football Americas. The Oakland Roots. This is their first kit. What do you think, Herc?
Yeah, I'm about it. Listen, I love the color scheme. I love how they do. It's kind of like a stained glass that's broken kind of thing. Oakland's got a great logo. Mm-hmm. They got a great story, fan ownership.
Hey, what was the reaction to you wearing this on the show? I felt like everybody was talking about your shirt.
Well, I mean, they were talking about my punditry, and then they brought up this shirt.
Yes, of course, of course. It did get a lot of positive feedback. That was my my point there with the beautiful Oakland Roots kit coming in at number 2. Number 1. The best kit in all of USL in 2024. Okay, all right, production. Miami FC, they're calling this the Predator jersey, Herc.
Did I? I like the collar.
There's definitely, they've had a very similar jersey
but
to
not
this
with the
very
collar.
Recently. And I don't know with the, I don't think they have the white sleeves either on the last one, did
no,
they?
No, I like the collar. You know that, I don't know what that sponsor is, but I've seen that sponsor in a bunch of Liga MX Expansión, and I dig it. They got some very sweet kits. So I'm about it.
Absolutely. You think Lionel Messi's jealous over there, looking at these kids?
Yeah. He already wants to jump ship.
Yes. Yeah, what a story that would be. So there you have it. Number 1, Miami FC, the best kit in USL. I have to say, Herc, I am disappointed that Orange County's For the Cup kit did not make it here. Orange County putting the US Open Cup right in the smack dab middle of their shirt. That's got to be number 1.
I think it just came out like today or like last night, if I'm not mistaken. So a little too late.
Sorry, they're calling it the Magic of the Cup kit. And you definitely love it because it's another one of the Hummel ones. So, all right. USL Championship on ESPN Plus this weekend. We got 7 games. I'm particularly interested in the Phoenix-Birmingham matchup because you've got the defending champions against one of 2 USL teams to make the quarterfinals in the Open Cup.
You're crazy,
last year.
Son. Las Vegas Lights, Joey Bats.
All right, her CONCACAF Champions Cup, round of 16, first leg, Club America against Chivas. This one in Guadalajara. Pick it up. 11th minute. America on the attack. US international Alejandro Zendejas with the shot. Can't beat the goalie.
Yeah, Zendejas was active. Got his own rebound there. Takes a shot across. Wally, who's not been starting regularly. It's been Tapa, or Talavera, I should say. Tala.
Zendejas involved again here with the cross. Quiñones, the header, it's stopped. But wait, there's a trip. We're going to the spot.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Lalo Torres right here, a converted defensive midfielder turned center back for this game. Quiñones goes to the spot, and he's not going to miss from there.
Quiñones converts. Torres, by the way, would get a yellow card on that play. Keep that in mind. But here's Julian Quiñones to make it 1-0 America. 21st minute, Chivas with a chance. Orozco can't finish.
Yeah, he should really do better. This is a center back right here in a goal scoring position. He goes with the left foot. Maybe you opt with your head or the right foot. And oh no, oh no.
Chivas missing out on a chance. América here attacking. Israel Reyes into the box. Penalty called, but wait, they're going to overturn it on VAR.
Yeah, Orozco goes down. That hand looks like it's awfully close to the body, and the right call ends up being made. No penalty.
No penalty for América, so the game stays at 1-0. First half stoppage time. Chivas on the corner. Pollo Briseño, the header. Malagón, the save.
Yeah, the house special from Pollo Briseño takes out like three players, two of his own. And look at Luis Malagón. Big save. It's right at him, but it's still a good reaction save.
So América then up 1-0 at the half. And look at this. I mean, you wouldn't expect anything else, would you, Herc?
No. And Alan Mosso getting the crowd riled up. And right here, Marin doesn't get it. And Guzman doesn't either. Goes across two players. Good ball from Piojo Alvarado in. Marin right there can't get it. And then Guzman with the left foot just misses.
Chivas, right to start the second half. Here's more. As they're on the attack in América's end, and Eric Gutierrez is gonna get an opportunity, send it over the bar.
Yeah, and he's been taking a lot of heat. You gotta get this at least on target. It's an open look. I know you got a lot of pressure coming at you, but you gotta force some type of save.
Massive moment in the match. 61st minute, Chivas gonna go down to 10 as Quiñones is tackled by Torres. That's his second yellow.
Yeah, I thought this was a bad call, to be honest.
Of course you did.
It should have been a direct red, not a second yellow.
There it is. So would América be able to take advantage? The answer, a resounding yes. Diego Valdez makes it 2-0.
I mean, if we can go back a bit, the way this play comes out on their own end, Fidalgo, 1-2 in the middle of the field with Quiñones, and then brings the ball up to Sendejas and then to Diego Valdez. And then this shot right here off the post. And insult to injury, that's Martin right there.
Naveda with a shot, Henry Martin with the rebound to make it 3-0 for Club America as they go to Guadalajara in the first leg of the round of 16 and win by a impressive scoreline. All right, Herc, what do you think hurt Chivas more? The tactics of their manager, Gago, who is being heavily criticized here, or the red card with half an hour to play?
Yeah, without a doubt, and Fernando Gago, you're right, is getting killed in the press. It's without a doubt Fernando Gago. Now, listen, if there's one thing we enjoyed about Chivas this season in their play, it's how they played in that 4-3-3, how they played pressing teams, how they played being so dynamic. They were always at the front foot. They never just sat back. They never worried so much about the opponent that they showed him so much respect or so much fear until Fernando Gago did this. Fernando Gago goes line of five defenders, converting a defensive midfielder into a third center back who was crucial in the breakdown of this team. Committed a penalty kick and then gets red carded. But it's what happens when he gets red carded that Fernando Gago just loses me and I can't defend him anymore in this game. 61st minute, Lalo Torres gets red carded. What does he do? It's a two-legged affair. It's a 180-minute match. You got to shut this down. You cannot concede any more goals. Take your chances on the road, 1-0, 11-11. He doesn't do that. He brings on Cade Cowell. He brings on Chicharito Hernandez, who's coming off an injury. He goes forward, and he leaks two more goals. This is on Fernando Gago. I wish I could defend him here, but I just can't.
Yeah. What's weird is he makes mistakes on both ends, right? If you want to talk about the lineup and the back five, you can say, you're way too conservative, right? And then if you want to talk about the game management, when you go down a goal, you can say, what are you doing? You're way too aggressive. Kind of decide on one and let that be your identity as Chivas. I think the biggest complaint, and I heard this from producer Beto, who we know is a big Chivas fan, one of the signs that he wasn't being aggressive with the lineup is Cade Cowell not being in there. At what point are we going to say Cade Cowell is like a must starter for this Chivas team to be as good as they can be in a game like this? And hey, you know me, I love America. I actually think Cade Cowell could have done some damage against this team.
That's a difficult one because in the games that Cade Cowell has started, Liga MX, let's leave Forge FC aside, the great second division Canadian team, he's not exactly proven that worth. He's a player that's very explosive in open space, and those spaces have been afforded when he comes off the bench. I'm not so much worried about Cade Cowell as I am. I just think he conceded this game. He showed... It's not even respect. He showed America fear. And America's the type of team that smells blood in the water, and they're going to eat you up. Now, we're talking about Chivas right now, but America is a very good team. América proved that they are levels above Chivas and have been for quite some time. One could argue that this is the norm when these two meet, that the red card that happened with Álvaro Fidalgo in that semifinal is not the norm. That is an exception to the rule. And normally when they meet, it's golizas like this. It's routes like this. América's far and above the better team last night.
Is it over?
Yes, absolutely.
No way for Chivas to get back into this going back to Mexico City.
Not the way América's playing against them. The only way is if something happens like it happened to Chivas and there is a red card or multiple and Jardine does something silly like Fernando Gago did against América. I don't see that happening, Seb. I think they got to forget about this one and do some type of damage control, like make it competitive, just damage control so this game doesn't get out of hand, León doesn't get out of hand, and then the return league play game between these two that's coming up doesn't get out of hand so Fernando Gago doesn't find himself out of a job. Mm.
Real quick, Herc, on América, when we recently talked about kind of the teams in Liga MX that had looked the best so far this season, we didn't mention Club América, really, either of us in that conversation. They haven't been in that conversation. They're only 1 point off the top of the table, but even I would agree with you that they have not looked their free-flowing best so far this season. After what you saw in this game against Chivas, do you believe that was more bad Chivas on the day, or is América maybe getting closer to its ceiling, closer to that league-winning form that we saw last year?
One game, actually it's two games. They played well against Cruz Azul and now against Chivas. And those are clásicos for them and golizas. I believe a 6-0 aggregate there in those two games. That's something to be said. So they are getting closer to their ceiling, but they still have CONCACAF champions to contend with. And right now it's Chivas, but there are other teams out there. And listen, if you taught me anything, it's not to bet against Messi. So once those two cross, and I do think that narrative is already starting down south in Mexico. They're starting to separate América from the pack, which I think is silly in Mexico because there's still an undefeated team out there, which is Monterrey.
Yeah.
They're starting to separate those from the pack and their ideology. But then you start saying who could stop América, and they keep bringing up Messi. They keep bringing up Inter Miami. Yeah. So I think sooner rather than later, we're going to see what this América is about.
If there's one thing about this team, Club América, that for me as like a fan gives me confidence, because it hasn't been there necessarily on the field over the last couple months, it's the way that the team is put together. I really feel like when you look at depth and you talk about all these competitions that are coming up, América is very well positioned. If they don't sell anybody, Herc, because I feel like every single week I see a new Club América attacking player linked with a transfer move. But if they keep this squad as it is, I feel good about their chances, not just in Liga MX, CONCACAF Champions, like Leagues Cup. I think this América can compete across all fronts with the roster they have.
I think you hit the nail on the head there if they don't sell anybody. Because Cabecita Rodriguez, he wants out. He doesn't want to be behind Julián Quiñones. He doesn't want to be behind Brian Rodriguez, which is the case today. He's behind those two players, and deservedly so. But the biggest maybe sell potential transfer is Henry Martín. If Henry Martín gets sold, and per Televisa's in-house reporter, Gibran Araike, he's got an important offer from Major League Soccer that even América cannot compete with, and it's up to Henry Martín. If that transpires, I think this house of cards comes flying down, comes crashing down for América.
Really? Just on Henry Martín specifically, you think he's the guy that can't afford
to
lose?
Glue. I think he's the glue. The 31-year-old forward, team captain, he's the glue. He goes, América goes with it.
You think he'd be lured to MLS? Where do you think he'll end up?
Where do I think he'll end up?
Yeah.
Or where do I want to see him end up?
Say it again, Herc.
There's where I think and where I see him.
Give it to me.
I think it's between two teams that I would love to see him, and I think makes sense, the Seattle Sounders and the LA Galaxy. I think we may see Henry Martín in the West Coast.
Look at that. Hercules Gomez suggesting Henry Martín could be on his way, not just out of Club América, but moving on to Major League Soccer.
Not my report.
Larin with the weight has fallen on his shoulders with the absence of Mourinho.
Say Larin's weight in the centre. Will this be squared by Danny Rodriguez? Kyle Larin has scored!
Impresionante!
Lo hace el canadiense. It is a good strike from the Canadian. Samuel pega Larin!
Larin might hit this on the deck. Kyle Larin has scored.
and he comes through in style.
What a season it's been for Mallorca. They're in the final of the Copa del Rey in April, of course, against Athletic Club. In the league, they're not doing bad either. 15th, but 8 points away from the drop zone ahead of this weekend's game against Barcelona. Canadian Kyle Laren been playing well, starting a lot of late. And on Wednesday, Laren caught up with our Alex Kirkland. Let's check it out.
You've just qualified for the Copa del Rey final. Now you're playing Barca in La Liga. They've got some injuries, especially in midfield. How much of an opportunity is this for you guys going up against Barca this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we've been on a great run and in the Copa del Rey, and I think it's important for the club to have this achievement. And we're in the finals now. It's going to be a great match, and just taking this great form we've been in and going to Barcelona, and they have a couple of injuries, but they always have a great team and great quality players. So it's going to be a difficult game, but if we keep the same intensity we've been doing, we can get crucial points.
It's been an amazing season for you guys. Copa del Rey finalists and big results in the league as well. For you personally, you haven't quite managed to post the same numbers that you did at Valladolid Leeds. I wonder if you had been able to identify any factors in why that might be and what you've been looking at doing.
Yeah, I mean, I came late into, I didn't have a preseason here and with Mallorca, and it took me time to get my fitness and my form, you know, and then once I did, I started to feel better and play better. And Valladolid had a different style of play, and I was getting used to the way we played here, and then it took time. It was an up and down season, and slowly I found my form. So I just try to keep doing that and just try to put more goals in the back of the net and help the team win.
The coach, Javier Aguirre, is a real character. You might say he's a bit of a legend here in Spain. He's outspoken. What's your relationship been like? What's it like working with him?
Yeah, it's different than any other coach. He's quite a guy, but it's been good, and I've been learning his style of play, and so that took a little time, and I think that was for me was the transition from Valladolid. So, but now I'm used to it, and I just have to keep going from here.
There's a big Canadian influence at Mallorca with Steve Nash in particular. I don't know, did he play a big part in you coming in and joining the club?
No, I know he was one of the owners before I came, and it's good to have another Canadian part of the club, and the important part was for me that the club was growing and building a new stadium, bringing new players in to grow and to do better each year, and that's the thing for me, and I want to be a part of that to build a great club.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of your Canada teammates and how much you might like to see them join you in Spain. Lots of talk about Alfonso Davies right now. In terms of ability, there's no question. I mean, he has the quality to play for any club in the world, right? Whether it's Real Madrid or somewhere else.
Yeah, no, he's a fantastic player. To play with him is great, and to have him on your team is really, really great. He's a different type of player, and I think he would enjoy Spain, and for me, it's one of the best leagues, and he'll only get better if he comes.
Another player we've heard linked to Spain in the past is Jonathan Davids. Is he another player who you think his skill set might suit Spanish football?
Yeah, Jonathan's a very smart player, and I play with him in the national team a lot, and he has the ability to play in this league too, and then if one day he does, he'll score a lot of goals. I know that for sure.
And one last question: how's Team Canada right now? You've got an interim coach in charge going into the Copa America playoffs. How are you guys feeling?
No, I think we're looking forward to this game, and we know the mistakes we made in the last games, and I think everybody's ready to go, and the coach is ready to go. He's back again, and we're just all focused on winning this game to make it to Copa America.
And here's a look at the stats so far this season for Kyle Laren at Mallorca. In league play, 2 goals and 2 assists in 25 appearances. Only 14 of those appearances, though, in a starting role. Mallorca will be in action Friday against Barcelona. A reminder, you can catch that right here on ESPN Plus. Barcelona, 8 points back right now of your league leaders, Real Madrid. Speaking of Real Madrid, he'll be taking on Luca de la Torre and Celta de Vigo on Sunday. De la Torre having a good season, 3 goals, 5 assists across all competitions for Celta, who right now are 17th in league play in a real relegation dogfight, just one spot above the drop zone. Here's Luca looking ahead to his trip to the Santiago Bernabeu.
I wanted to ask you about working with Rafa Benitez. How has he influenced your game, and what does he ask of his midfielders?
Yeah, obviously he's a coach who's won everything. So that was new for me, working with someone with such a big name. I think he's someone who's really focused on the details. And as a midfielder, it's really important to be secure with the ball and understand where it needs to go. And to also be really focused defensively on the positioning and the second balls and things like that.
I was watching your goals back this season. The backheel versus Valencia might be the highlight. Talk us through that goal, and do you think your contribution in attack has taken a step up this season?
Thanks, yeah. Yeah, that's something I wanted to add a little bit more. It was more of a tactical adjustment about arriving at the box more in good positions. And knowing that if I arrive 5 times a game, maybe I'll get the ball once, and then it has to be a goal. The goals I've scored this season have come like that, just arriving in a good area and then finishing. And yeah, the goal against Valencia was just instinct, you know, when the ball comes at you that fast. It's almost easier to score like that than when you have more time. So, yeah.
You play Real Madrid this weekend. I think your first game for Celta was against Real Madrid too. What's it like playing at Bernabeu?
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's such a big stadium. It's a really good atmosphere. You know, it's what every player dreams of, to play in those types of games. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Jude Bellingham is suspended for this game, so you won't have to go up against him. But you did play against him back in August. What are his biggest strengths as a player and as an opponent? How can you combat them?
He's very good at arriving in the box as a midfielder. And it's really difficult to mark for a center back who's kind of focusing on the striker. He scored against us also from just being in the right place at the right time. And it can be really hard to defend against. If he can read the game well and know where the bounce is going, you know,
ask you a bit about the U.S. men's national team. You went to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar, but didn't play. How do you think you've grown as a player since then?
Yeah, I think it's been a lot of growth. At that time, I just signed for Celta. I wasn't playing. Now I have a season and a half in La Liga under my belt, and also a lot more games with the national team. So yeah, I just feel more comfortable at this level and ready to play more.
There's a lot of competition for places in the U.S. midfield. What do you think your role might be now? And how's your relationship with Berhalter?
Yeah, the relationship is good. I think what I like about Greg is he's a coach that players can be honest with, you know, and he doesn't seem to hold it against them. As far as my position in the team, yeah, we have to see. You know, I'm doing everything I can with my club to show that I deserve to be there. And then when I'm there, it's just about taking opportunities and whatever minutes I get and doing really well so that I get more chances.
Celta is in a relegation battle this season in La Liga. For U.S. sports fans, the idea of relegation can be a bit of an alien concept. What's it like for a player spending a season fighting for relegation? And more broadly, what do you think about comparing leagues with relegations and those without relegation?
Yeah. It's a lot of pressure, you know. Unfortunately, I've been in this situation the last few seasons, so I think I have more experience in it now, which helps a little bit. As far as the difference between leagues that have or don't have relegation, you know, it definitely makes the games at the bottom of the table matter a lot more. I don't think anyone can argue with that.
All right, Herc, always good to hear from the very honest and candid Luca de la Torre. What's your big takeaway from the interview there?
A few things. Regarding Celta is what Rafa Benitez, who's a very successful manager and a manager so successful he's never played for somebody like that, wants him to do. and how he's flourishing into that system. And the other one is what he was saying about, you know, Greg Berhalter and the national team. I think it's very interesting to see how players, I guess, express themselves about Greg Berhalter. And we shouldn't be surprised, but they seem to enjoy playing for him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was interesting, too, is, like, for those that don't know kind of the backstory on De La Torre, and he's told the story himself, that, like, at one point, one of the criticisms, one of the feedbacks he got was that he wasn't very good in transition. Right. And then I don't know if he edited the video, but somebody for him edited a video of him just running transition.
Yeah.
And that back and forth kind of got a lot of headlines. But, you know, since then, it's not like De La Torre was buried. Eventually kind of grew back into the team under Berhalter.
Yeah. Credit to Berhalter for, I guess, for not holding those grudges.
Tell John Brooks that.
John Brooks, Zach Steffen,
yeah.
You know, Gio Reyna, Ricardo Pepi, there are a few. But hopefully that's not the case so these players can come back into the fold, excuse me. But very much so, Luca Della Torre was one of those players and earned himself a World Cup trip.
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting is when you think of Rafa Benitez and the impact he would have on a midfielder, it's not necessarily like more productivity, but we're seeing a very productive version of Luca Della Torre thing, and I think that's very good for the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, under Caldera, it was a different style, right? When he was on the field, he was doing different things, but this is absolutely, listen, there's got to be life after Tyler Adams for the U.S. men's national mm-hmm. at some point, and he's not
or without, yeah.
Right, or without, I should say, because Tyler Adams has not played for the U.S. men's national team since the World Cup. He's not played mm-hmm. soccer for almost a year, so there has to be a possibility of what that looks like without him, and how does Luca Della Torre fit into this? You know, because right now, Yunus Musa is not exactly playing a whole ton, so maybe Luca Della Torre has something to say there.
You heard Luca in the interview, he said, you know, I just got into Celta before the last World Cup. In that time, Herc, which has been, you know, about 2 years, this dude, I mean, less than 2 years, like a year and a half, he's had three managers at Celta. Yeah. So credit to him for being able to have a role with all three, and certainly a role that's growing right now under Rafa Benitez. Celta de Vigo then away to Real Madrid on the weekend. Game you can catch right here on ESPN+. Plus, coverage starts at 1 p.m. Eastern time ahead of a 1:30 p.m. kickoff at the Santiago Bernabeu. Herc, let's do some CONCACAF Champions Cup action tonight. The Brandon Vasquez Bowl. FC Cincinnati against Rayados. Pick this one up 17 minutes in. And how about that for a start? The goal from Corey Baird, but the offside flag up.
And it's well called. Lucho Costa, great little ball. Corey Baird just offside.
Since he thought they might have had a lead, instead, the man that they just sold scoring a goal here in the 24th minute. And Herc, he did not celebrate.
All right, where do we start? Great movement by Vasquez. Matt Miazga loses his man. There's a shot right there that Calento should definitely do better with. He does not. 1-0, Brandon Vasquez and Rayados.
First half stoppage time. Header here from Vasquez, saved.
Yeah, and Brandon Vasquez doing what he does best. Good movement in the box. It's a header right there. Goalkeeper, very firm, good place. No go.
So we go into the second half here, and Rayados are going to get a red card for Rodrigo Aguirre after the VAR check.
Yeah, I don't know what Rodrigo Aguirre is doing here or what he thinks is going to happen. He looks like very confused after, like he didn't see this coming. You can't do that.
Since he's trying to take advantage, Sergio Santos gonna get the shot off here.
Yeah.
Denied.
Santos, Bupenza, Lucho, Baird. There was a lot of opportunities for Cincinnati and they just could not finish.
So still 1-0. Late, we go to the 86th minute here. Rayados with a chance. Berterame's shot. Whoa, almost made it two.
The $15 man, excuse me, Portland Timbers reportedly looking at this player right now for $15 million, a man down, and he's showing you why he may be just worth it.
So Rayados there. 1-0 winners in the first leg against FC Cincinnati. And as we take a look at the rest of the first leg results in the CONCACAF Champions Cup round of 16, worth noting, Inter Miami playing right now against Nashville and with Messi, Suarez, and Busquets, but no Alba in the starting lineup. At this moment, they are down 1-0 to Nashville. All right, Herc, that'll just about do it for this edition of Football Americas. Why don't you show off your beautiful kit one more time for the folks at home?
Thanks to the good people, Sacramento, always hooking us up, representing. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, shout out to the good folks at the Oakland Roots as well. They do beautiful jerseys and they know where to send them here on Football Americas. All right, we will be back on Monday. Of course, Herc will be talking about the CONCACAF W Gold Cup final between the United States and Brazil. And we'll have an interview with Haji Wright, the U.S. international, with Coventry City, who are still alive in the FA Cup. And you know, Herc, on this show, if there's one thing we love, it's the magic of the cup. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Thanks for watching. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here on Monday.